The following podcast may contain mature themes and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the No Fear Project Podcast. I'm your host, Pete D'Amico. We continue our exploration of parenting fears today with Bill Kent. Once again, I talked to Bill before the coronavirus pandemic fully impacted us. Bill joins us to talk about making a decision that impacted the physical health of his daughter. Like any parent in that situation, Bill was concerned about making the best choice. All he wanted was the best for his daughter. He wanted her out of pain. But the decision wasn't that simple. We will talk to Bill, a fellow Silver Fox athlete, right after this quick word from our sponsor, Silver Fox Athletics. The pandemic has thrown a wrench into our lives, including our athletic goals. We are all on the hunt for help to get back on track or find ways to improve, even as races are canceled. That's where Coach Andy and Silver Fox Athletics can help. Coach Andy can help you with your goals and to maintain consistency in a world without races. I've worked with Andy for a couple of years, and he has helped me overcome my fears while hitting fitness heights I never thought possible. Coach Andy concentrates on middle and back of the pack runners, so all you need is a desire to move, and he will set you up with a plan. Get more information about Silver Fox Athletics at silverfoxathletics.org. Also, follow Silver Fox Athletics on Instagram. While you are there, click book to get your free initial consultation with Coach Andy. Make sure to tell him you heard about Silver Fox on the No Fear Project. Now joined by Bill Kent. Bill, welcome to the No Fear Project.
Hey, Pete, how are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Why don't you tell us just a little about yourself?
Okay, like you said, my name is Bill Kent. I am, we're going to talk parenting and everything, but anybody who knows, my full name is actually William Wallace Kent IV, which means that I have a fifth at home. He's actually, the fifth is now 24. He had a birthday recently, so he's 24. He moved back in after he graduated and lives at home while he works. He has a good full-time job, don't get me wrong, but he's just banking cash while he does that. The middle child, Maddie, is the oldest goes by the name Will now and everything. But Maddie is the middle child. She's at the University of Michigan. She finishes up and would have graduated. Well, she technically will graduate on May 2nd, but they've canceled commencement because as we're recording this, this is the first day of the rest of our lives, as I like to call it. And the youngest is, Tessa. She is in, New York City. Well, actually, she's just moved out of her dorm, today and got all her stuff out of her dorm. And is at her aunt's in Connecticut, and I leave maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day to Connecticut to get her and bring her home, because as every other parent, I'm sure, that has kids in college right now is going through like me, I just want all my kids right here in my home where I can touch them.
Yeah, I get that. I've got younger kids, two of them that don't live with me, and that's extremely difficult. I can't imagine having, you know, the college age, because as parents, they're still your kids. It never stops, even when they're adults.
Oh yeah. My mom is in Arizona, and she's just like making sure that all of her four kids and everything and her grandkids are, she's got great caring kids now, you know, just making sure that everybody's all, you know, set and everything. And it's like, okay, mom, you've got emphysema, you got COPD, stay the heck out of public, you know, just shut yourself in, at least it's Arizona, so she can, you know, get out under a porch in the middle of the day and nice weather, for them, you know, hey, 60 or 70 degrees is great. Where we're 30 some here in Michigan.
Yeah. So you said Will is at home. You've got Tessa at an aunt's in Connecticut, and you're going to be on your way to get her. And then Maddie, what's Maddie doing? Is she coming home?
Maddie just got back from spring break in Florida, and she is the very smart, intelligent, rational one. And her mom, my wife, Jen, she's got SVT. She's got she's on some heart stuff and everything. So she's kind of in an at-risk population, although we're not actually, in our 60s yet. And I actually am immunodepressed because of some psoriatic arthritis medicine that I'm on, one of the injectable biologics and everything. And so it's like, she's like, I just came back from there. Plus, it's like, okay, I think she just wants to stay with her boyfriend for, a few months or whatever it's going to be. Before she goes off to medical school. She's going off theoretically to UCLA. We'll see if she really does.
Well, that's pretty exciting. So you said your wife has, I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with the term. Did you say SVT?
SVT, supraventricular tachycardia. It's a heart rhythm type of thing. So it's one of those heart things that you're on, what is it? Calcium channel blockers or something like that type of thing. So we've got, some medical stuff going on in the family. And like I said, she's the rational, medical, very scientific oriented and everything. And she's like, no, I'm going to basically, quarantine as much as you can in a house full of, four other Naval ROTC guys. Her boyfriend's Naval ROTC. So it's like, yep, as much as you can self-quarantine in a situation like that, she's going to hang out for a couple of weeks. We made some jokes that we might, there's a town, Flint. If anybody who knows Michigan, Flint's about halfway between where I live and where Ann Arbor is. And we're like, oh, okay, we'll go to Flint and we'll just meet in a parking lot and talk to each other, from our cars in a parking lot. Do the social distancing thing with your own kids.
That's where we're at, though. I mean, it's interesting, even with running or exercising at all, we were just talking about like, okay, well, you kind of got to do that across the street and yell at each other at this point, just to be safe.
I've got nice gyms at work and everything, and they just got emails. They shut them down as of 3 p.m. today, at least through the end of the month. And my guess is it'll go longer. Running outside is going to be the thing. Hey, run in pairs or triplets and everything, 6 feet apart. And that'll be the new reality for a while, I think.
For sure. I mean, this is definitely something that's evolving. You can't even say day by day. At this point, it's kind of minute by minute. And we're coming off today. It was a press conference from President Trump that gave all new kinds of guidelines and the government's take on things. So it's evolving very, very fast. And tomorrow's election day here in Illinois, which ought to be probably the lowest turnout in history. So it's going to be interesting. But anyway. All right. Well, we talked about our current medical crisis, but you've been through some medical decisions in your own family before this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Hang on a real quick second. Okay. My wife just stepped in. What was that? Okay. He only charged us $250.
She paid $100 of her cash and she wrote him a
check. Okay, cool.
And she'll
cost. Okay, great. Okay. Okay. Yes. My daughter, from that, she actually made it to my sister-in-law's in Connecticut. The driver that we hired and everything to take her into New York City and help load her up and everything only charged us $250 for pretty much, 9 a.m. till whatever time, 5 p.m. type of day and everything. But she's there, she's getting fed, and it's like, okay, now I got to figure out when I go to Connecticut and pick her up.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good. You can breathe a little bit on that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, that's a little relief there. Now it's just 12 hours there, 12 hours back, and get everybody home because, yeah, I mean, my sister-in-law, she could hang there for a couple of months. That's not that big of a deal. But I, like I said before, I just want my kids here. I want them here. I want them here. I want them here.
Don't blame you.
Not that I can do anything better. You know what I'm saying? It's the total irrational, you know, type of, you know, the hug them close type of deal and everything.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we're living in the middle of a fear epidemic as much as a viral epidemic.
Oh yes, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, it's like, okay, I'm educated, I'm rational and all the rest of that. And it's like, okay, yep, I get it. I know it's irrational. I don't care. I don't, you know, luckily I told my wife to go buy all the, we didn't need toilet paper, but to go buy the food and everything a day before everything really here in town got really weird last week.
That's good.
Cause Michigan, we shut down our schools. It was last week. I think it was like Wednesday or Thursday. They did the announcement. So they've been shut down all week or since late last week, and we knew it was going to shut down. The University of Michigan shut down and went to only online courses. Now, you know, my daughter obviously has an apartment, so she's not in dorms there and everything. But an apartment building a block over from her has a confirmed case in it and everything. And I'm like, okay, get the hell out of there. But I understand why she won't. And I totally get that and everything. I just don't like it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, okay, this is not the time to be rational from my perspective in some respects. Although, yes, I applaud the rationality. And then the youngest, it's just like, get her home because she's going to be home for the whole summer and everything. The middle one, obviously, you know, Maddie, she's going to move on and, go to med school and everything. So that'll be something entirely different.
All right.
Yep.
Okay. So we were going to start talking about another decision that you guys had to make within your family that,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it still looms large, of course, but when you put things in perspective, I don't know if anything's changed in your mind or not, but why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Yeah, so the middle one, Maddie, she probably, let's see, she's 22 now, so this would have been about the time she was 16, so 15, 16, so 6-7 years ago, she started experiencing some pain in her hip, as she was doing, competitive dance. It's called pom-pom here. And she was doing the pom-pom routines and doing that. So we started getting her looked at from doctors, you know, various sports doctors. Hey, what's up with the hip and everything? And they looked at it a couple of different ways. And it's like, oh, you've got a torn labrum in the hip was the eventual diagnosis. And it was like, well, okay, you know, can she do it make it any worse or anything? And they said, no, not really. You know, you just need to get it looked at the end of the season. So we did and went through, a couple MRIs and stuff like that. Saw a couple of, got referred to people down at the University of Michigan area, and the first doctor is looking at it going, okay, yep, I can go in laparoscopically, you know, I can kind of repair the tear and everything. She has, they're called antiverted. They're tilted forward. Her hips are tilted forward. And he's like, it's just going to re-tear type of thing. So he, referred us to another doctor, pediatric, orthopedist guy. And he looked at it and he's like, yeah, you know, there's a couple of different things they can do. So we started with the first surgery when she was, that would have been her junior year in high school. So 16, 17, something like that. Started with the first one. And it's like, okay, he went in, God, what'd they do that one? went in, basically cleaned up the hip joint and everything. She had some, I don't want to call them bone spurs, but he cleaned the hip joint up, repaired the cartilage, reassembled everything back together. And then, she was still having a lot of pain after a couple of months of that, and, you know, in 6 months into recovery. And so we're like, okay, yep, I'm going to go back in. And, you know, and he had said at that point in time, it's like, you know, when we started down this whole thing, it's like, yeah, you are probably, based on everything you got going to need a hip replacement surgery at some point. And, you know, it's like, okay, she's going to need this hip replaced at some point. And his whole deal was, let's try to make that as far down the road as possible. And so second surgery came and went, and he looked at that and everything, and, he's going in, and what they were going to do for this one was they were actually going to cut the socket out of the pelvis bone, out of the pelvis, and kind of move it around so that it was, so that the angles of the joint were different, if you will. And then basically, you know, screw it in, I don't know, whatever, do weird stuff like that. But as he got in there and he looked at what he had done before, he's checking out the cartilage, and her cartilage, instead of being, like he said, like a pretty hard plastic, or, you know, with a little bit of give to it and everything, it was almost like cotton candy. Like, her cartilage had started breaking down and everything. And so he's like, okay, yep, we can't really do what he was going to do. So what he did at that particular point was, and he came out of the surgery, she's still in the back under and everything, and went, he called an audible and replaced, so what did we end up doing? Broke the femur. So he took the femur and he broke it and he twisted it so that he would get some of the same type of stuff and everything, and then put a couple of plates and screws around that. And then, okay, she did that, and a couple of months, weeks, whatever, later and everything, it's like, yep, they went back in, took out the plates and the screws, and we're like, okay. And then her freshman year, I think it was freshman year in college, sophomore year in college, God, when was it? It was before she turned 20. She's 22 now, so 2 years ago. So 2.5 years ago, everything, she's still having pain and everything, like getting so bad that she can't really walk to around class, around campus that much and everything. And so she went in and we talked to, got referred to a couple of guys and everything, and got a second opinion. Yep, she needs it replaced. So she went in, got a full hip replacement before she turned 20. And it's like, okay, once you go down that route, you don't go back. And honestly, to this day, I mean, it's 2 years later and she still has a good bit of pain now. But that's, you know, it's instead of the bone on bone, hip type stuff, it's now tendons and muscles and all the area around that and everything, not really post-operative as much as it's just like ongoing tendonitis and everything, that, is still causing her issues 2 years later. So did we do anything right? Have we helped the fucking situation? And it's like, I don't know. I mean, it was one of those things that's like almost when you start down a path, and it's like, okay, there's no turning back at certain points, especially, you know, once you go down the full hip replacement, it's like, there you are. Yes. Okay. So questions?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you've got so many questions like around yourself in terms of, did you and your wife, and I'm sure, I mean, she was old enough when this stuff started to discuss it with her. It wasn't like, yeah, you were making a decision in a vacuum, right?
No. Yeah. And she has, this was like, okay, she had been totally involved in all the decision making along that process. I mean, yeah, like I said, she was 15, 16, maybe when all this started. Now, let's be honest, the 15-year-old is more concerned with, you know, hey, I want to get back and do the competitive pom-pom stuff. And things of that nature. It's not that even the difference between 15-year-old Maddie and 22-year-old Maddie is just astounding from my mind. She can 15-year-old was like, you know, what's going to happen next week? What's going to happen next month? Can I do the competitive stuff next year type of thing? Whereas 22-year-old can think longer term, much longer term than a 15-year-old can. And that's just, you know, the maturity. Now, that's not to say that she couldn't at the 15-year-old. It's just, did we listen too much to the 15-year-old and take too much of the 15-year-old's wishes into, let's start down this route and everything. Whereas now 22-year-old, we can't turn back. And I don't know, you know, it wasn't the right thing. I can't answer that. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, yep. I really didn't want to go down the full replacement type of deal, because I'm like, oh, someday soon, hopefully they'll be able to regrow cartilage in the hip and everything. You know, oh yeah, that would be great and everything. And yes, maybe they're 5-10 years away from that, but it's like, okay, but you can't have your kid in pain all the time. That was absolutely awful after the first surgery when she went in and she came out and, you know, okay, they're doing stuff and everything and they're doing the occupational therapy type stuff, showing her how to, you know, put her socks on and stuff like that, or even how to get out and walk and sit on a toilet and doing steps and everything. Oh my God, I had to leave the room. I mean, it's like, you know, there's my she's freaking crying from the pain, and I'm crying 5 years later remembering it. Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, she's like, don't, Dad, don't cry. It's like, well, what the hell else am I going to do? It's, you know, you're my baby. You know, I'm supposed to, you can't do shit, and that sucks. Anyway, and that's not a fear. That's just the total lack of control type of dad moment, which, you know, her mom's better at that stuff than I am. Yeah.
Well, I think for a lot of us as parents, we would much rather go through something ourselves, horrendous, than see our kid even stub a toe, right? So
yeah.
I don't think that your reaction is unusual. I could tell you that if it was me, I would be just as emotional. And I'm not sure that you second guess yourself as much as you have a fear that you just didn't make the best decisions going down the line for her.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a point where we could have made a different decision where things would have turned out differently? It's the second guessing. Yeah. That's what it is. At what point do you, and there's a lot of it. I'll admit I'm really good at it's like, okay, yeah, that decision is gone. That one has been made. This is where we are now. Let's look at where we are now and let's make the best situation where you are now. And yes, well, there's some second guessing. I think I'd like to be pretty good at that. There are other times where it's like, okay, yeah, did you do the right thing? And actually for me in the moment, the fear is like, you know, okay, I've got choice A, B, or C. Okay, we're going with B for this reason. Okay, are we making the right decision? You know, are we making the right decision? From my perspective, you just got to, okay, you're going with B. Okay. You all agreed with B. Okay. You're going to go with B, and the one it's really affecting, the daughter, is on board with that. Okay. You're going to go with B, and then you can't really look back. I mean, you know, the past is past. Now you just got to deal with where you are. And yes, there's that ongoing fear, but it's almost like, I don't know. I try not to beat myself up about that too much. Sure. The other one. Okay. Yeah. I haven't even told you this one, but I will as well. The youngest, Tessa, when she was third grade, whatever age that is. So let's say 8 years old and everything. She had, God, I remember this vividly too. My wife woke me up out of a dead sleep, and she was in a grand mal seizure, at like 1 o'clock in the morning and everything. She had been sick for a couple of weeks or like a week and hadn't really been taking in much food. And she basically, ended up being a blood sugar thing. And because her blood sugar had dropped so low. And so we, we called 911. I remember 911 coming in. The other two kids were here, and my wife hops in the ambulance with this one. I got to run next door and in the rain, get the neighbor lady to come watch the two kids. And we go to the hospital and everything. We're there, till I don't know what time they let us out, 10 o'clock in the morning. Thought they had the blood sugar under control. We bring her back home and everything, and she starts going back into a seizure again. We basically get her there and get her transferred to a pediatric ICU where she is for 3 days and everything. And, it's that fear that you don't know what the hell is going on. Now, me personally, I don't know if it's a personality thing. I don't know if it's a guy thing. I don't know what it is. I basically shut down all emotion in that situation. And it's like, okay, I become very much, just do this, do X, do Y, do Z, attacking the problem and everything. I basically shut down emotionally for, when she was in the hospital for 3 days. I remember bringing her in, and I can tell you, we get her here, we get her back inside the house, and I go back out in the car to get stuff, and I freaking break down in the car for like 5 minutes, let the emotion, have the crying fit and everything like that. And then come back in and just deal with the family and everything like that. I don't want to say that I fucking hid it from the kids, from my wife, so that I could be the strong one, but I'm not.
Yeah, that's, I think, pretty common for, I'm not sure a male trait, but I do think it's a parental trait that, we can lock ourselves away for a little bit, right?
Right. And you've got to do that. And then you get into the, okay, yeah, my wife's like, oh yeah, we could have lost, or she wants to revisit the whole, she was in ICU for a while until we got this blood sugar thing worked out, which is really weird because she's not diabetic or anything like that. And, I'm reaching for wood. Everything has been good since that whole deal. Well, it had a couple other issues, but we got that all worked out. But it's like, okay, that's the one that's in New York City. That's the one I want home.
Yeah.
That's the one that just get her home.
For sure.
So, it's the fear of losing the kids. It's the fear of making the wrong choices in situations like that, where everything's totally out of your control. But those are the parental things that, oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, like in Maddie's case, it wasn't necessarily life threatening, but it was life altering.
Correct. In Tessa's case, it was very life threatening.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you know, but then once you get past the life-threatening thing, then it's like you can do certain things that are more in your control. You know, the follow-up with the primary care physician or pediatrician, we're like, okay, he's like, yeah, we really need to see, get an endocrinologist and all these things looked at, because we had no freaking clue why the blood sugar was doing this at that particular point in time. And it's basically, it's called starvation ketosis. She basically had no fat to burn, and she's starting to burning muscles, like we do in marathons and everything. But where people get freaking weird in the marathon and start hallucinating because their body's breaking down and stuff like that, it's like, okay, yeah, that's basically to a larger extent what she was going through, because she had no fat on her bones and everything. And it's like, okay, but you can then talk to the nutritionist and everything once things are relatively stable, and you can be like, oh, okay, yes, we have to feed her. She has to drink whole milk with, like Carnation Instant Breakfast inside of it and everything. She hates that shit now. Because, for like 6 months after this whole deal, we were just trying to pack weight on her and everything and get her, back to something. Because, you go to the doctors, you do these well visits, and everything looks good from the curves and everything, but body fat percentage or whatever, I don't know if they, she was in the 20th percentile, and at some point she was even lower than that probably. And it's like, no, we got to get her up and give her some meat that she can use and have those reserves in those situations. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a big one for parents to kind of watch out for. I'm not sure that I would have really thought much about that, but that's really a good point. And it's tough when your kids won't eat or don't want to eat. Kids tend to eat until they're full, right? We don't tend to overeat when we're children. So that's a tough one. So I appreciate you sharing that big time.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, we had always talked about Maddie, and because that is, she's the reason I started running, which is how you and I met in the first place and everything, is because, Maddie, when she was told, hey, you're never going to run again, it was like, okay, that was a nice long crying thing. And she had always wanted to do the marathon. And so I said, hey, you do the parental thing. You say you want to stop the crying. So it's like, oh yeah, I'll run that marathon for you. Stupid fucking thing to say. you do it, and you catch the running bug or whatever it is since then and everything. But, but Maddie's so great. I mean, we climbed a mountain. I'm using air quotes, which you can't see. There's a place is called Sugarloaf Mountain or Mount Sugarloaf. I can't remember. It's up near Marquette, Michigan, up in the Upper Peninsula. And I don't know. It's up on Lake Superior, maybe, 500 or 1,000 feet of elevation change. I didn't have my GPS with me, but we climbed up there, and she's on freaking crutches from one of these surgeries. It might have even been her full hip replacement. I don't remember. She just wants to climb up there like the rest of us. So she hasn't let even the pain, she doesn't let it get in her way. So I must have done something right there. Either that, or I taught her how to compartmentalize and keep all that stuff private and everything. But hopefully it doesn't get too bad for her.
Yeah, I actually had written down a question. Had, when you're talking about yourself and the questions you had along the process and with the process, and you think about it now at times, did she ever bring it up? Did she ever ask, did we make the right decisions here?
I have never heard her ask that question. The only thing that I hear from her is that she gets tired of people asking her how she's doing or how it is and everything. It's like she doesn't want it to define her, if you will. You know, it's like, okay, she's not just the hip and, you know, the 10-inch scar that, you know, it's, yeah, that, you can see when she wears a bathing suit or something like that. It's like, nope, she doesn't want that to define her. So she was very, reticent to talk about it, for a long time, but she now talks about it a lot more, and it might be because she, you know, she went through this whole med school application process recently, and that happened to be, you know, hey, one of the essay things that, she wrote about, because fundamentally, I mean, it's why she wants to become a doctor now. It's why she, you know, she has great empathy for patients and for people going through those things. I mean, when she was in a wheelchair for, I don't know what it was, 3-4 months after the hip replacement, and, you know, kids can be cruel, even just high schoolers, you know, saying shit in the hallways at her school, and it's like, oh my gosh, really? You know, she became very empathetic for people that have any type of situation going on. And so I guess from that perspective, I guess it was worth it, but no, it wasn't, you know.
Sure. Is she looking at orthopedics?
Yeah, she's looking at pediatrics. Oh, I don't know. She did look at orthopedics. You know, it's one of those things that it's still kind of early to decide. She's very much into, medical ethics and things of that nature. She did, she's a senior in college, and she's a published author now with, she was like, actually, she looking at the, how they named, you know, she wasn't like the top three, which were all MDs and PhDs, but she was she came through as like number fourth on this article. And then there's like another, you know, 4 or 5, you know, even, you know, grad school candidates and even another MD or PhD underneath her. And I'm like, yay. Okay. She's doing medical research with a doctor in, at U of M regarding, what do I want to call it? Ear, nose, and throat cancer type stuff, facial type of stuff. He does a lot of facial reconstructions because of, well, not so much reconstructions, but a lot of the oncology work and surgeries there. And, you know, she's done research into, okay, should you get them into these experimental treatments? What do you say? You know, what's the ethical thing to do? How do you, you know, do you want to, you know, give them, you know, hope and everything when, okay, this is just a trial. You know, you really don't know what the results are going to be. Do you want to shield them from that stuff? You know, or should everybody have the opportunities to get into the trials, even though there's only a, you know, I'm making a number up here, you know, a 10% chance that this stuff is really going to work and everything. Whereas, you know, okay, you know, but if it works, it's great. Or you can go down the proven chemo radiation routes and everything, which are 50% effective. But, you know, okay, you know, do you take the long shot at 10% or take the 50-50 shot with chemo? You know, she's into that stuff, into all that medical ethics stuff, which may be her questioning some of what happened with her. Oh, but she's very much into the bedside manner. I mean, even now, you know, with the pain that she's still having, she's going and talking to various other doctors and stuff and going, this guy's an asshole. I like talking to this one. He's listening and stuff like that. You know, so from a medical stuff, it's very good. Full disclosure, the oldest one, he's had asthma since he was young too, and has had all sorts of asthmatic stuff, but everything has worked out for him so far. We have not had to have any surgeries or anything like that. He's just, you know, playing in the backyard, you know, or schoolyard and everything, and, you know, running into trees and getting stitches. So The other two have been the, the big thing was the moment that kid was born, he came out and was not breathing. That was the awakening. That my first parental moment was, I would not even look over at that side of the delivery room as they're going through and giving him oxygen and Narcan and everything, because my wife had just gotten some pain meds and everything before he was born. And, you know, going through all that stuff, and it's like, oh my God, yeah, he came out with, for the Apgar score of like 1, or maybe it was 3. I think 3 is the lowest you can go, because there's 3 things. And anyway, he went from a 1 to a 9 in like, you know, 5 minutes. But it's like, oh my God, I couldn't even look at that side of the delivery room with him when he came out, because he wasn't breathing. He was gray, didn't cry and everything. And it's like, until he started screaming and everything, it's like, okay, yep, now things are, air quote, normal, and I can look over at him and everything. Yeah, so every one of them has done that to me.
Well, that 5 minutes is like a week. It just,
oh yeah,
it just, time stands still when something like that is going on. So, well, I'm glad that he doesn't give you too many more scares after that. I'm sure with COVID-19 there's some concern, because that attacks the lungs, so somebody with asthma is a little bit more susceptible to having it be serious. So stay safe, and you know, make sure you keep those kids close as much as you can.
Yeah, that's the plan. As soon as I can get the last one home, or the last one home that will come home, I'll be happy, or happier.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it, Bill. Thanks for taking the time, and this is going to help a lot of people. So appreciate that, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot.
That was a great talk with Bill about a very difficult subject. Thank you for sharing with us, Bill. As we wrap up this episode, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. You make the group and show possible. A special thank you to our producers, Diva Sylvia, the Endurance for Everyone podcast, and the Money, Motivation, and Motherhood podcast. The support of all our patrons during this trying time is humbling. Please be sure to subscribe to the No Fear Project on your favorite podcast app, and consider leaving a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really does help people find the show. Finally, remember, the way forward is together. The time to conquer is now.
Thank you for listening to the No Fear Project. Original music is from Josh and Dean. Join us on social media by searching the No Fear Project on Facebook and Instagram. Check out thenofearproject.com for more information, including in-person presentations on fear customized for your organization. The No Fear Project is committed to helping those with mental illness get help and to defeating the stigma. If you have any thoughts of harming yourself or suicide, please contact the Suicide Prevention Hotline for help now at 800-273-8255. Remember, you are not alone. The No Fear Project is a production of Paragon Media, all rights reserved.